So thank you, Conrad, and thanks, Conrad, for making this possible. And it's very nice, of course, to be back in Lucerne. It certainly feels like one of my homes. This is, what, the 10th time, I think, coming to teach here. And it's nice to see so many familiar faces. It's funny with the familiar faces. I'm not sure why you're here at this workshop. Because it's called Growing Young, but you all look younger. Now, is there anyone here who's never done Feldenkrais before? Okay, just one. Okay, but still, I'll give an introduction. And it's always nice for other people to hear it again, usually. So, of course, the method was developed by Moshe Feldenkrais, who is a really unusual man. And I was fortunate enough to have met him and worked with him. I think he was the only man in my life who was like that, a real Renaissance man. He had a broad knowledge from judo to physics, engineering, mathematics, and he was really interested in the development of the human being. And his interest came out of his own knee injuries. And he had bad knees till he died, but he was able to do the things he wanted to do. And so a lot of his focus initially probably was more from a biomechanical point of view, how to heal himself in a way. But of course, he very quickly became interested in the neurology and seeing how is it that we developed and function as human beings. Probably one of the things that he found to be most significant was our capacity for learning. And that very much ties into the theme of our workshop together, the idea of growing young. Part of our youth, probably one of the largest aspects of our youth, is engaged in learning. I mean, that's what children do. It's what an infant does from birth on. They're like sponges, taking in information and making sense out of the world. And then learning to negotiate the world, not just physically, personally, interpersonally, in a community. And we all recognize the different kinds of learning that occur in these different situations. We could say that one of the major functions of our nervous system is learning. And Feldenkrais had a very specific idea of learning. He talked about it as organic learning, as something that was innate in all of us. So all children negotiate the world through learning. And that kind of learning has some very particular parameters around it. Probably one of the most significant ones is the idea of a process. And too much as adults, we lose that sense of learning. So that too often our education is not engaged in a process, it's engaged in an outcome. So you learn something, and then you're finished. You've learned it. So that's informational. Now, real learning continues beyond that. So we understand something, and then maybe understand it in another way, and in another way, and it continues to develop as a process. So a lot of what we'll be doing in here is seeing, can we engage more and more in the process? Can we actually start to practice some aspects of the process? And in our lives, it's harder to do this because we want the outcomes and we get too attached to them. And then our learning becomes narrowed in some ways and we actually don't learn as much. And we often plateau and then we feel like, I can't get anywhere further than this. Now, it brings about two ideas. One is learning, How do you know when you've learned something? Did you think I was going to talk all day? Don't worry, I will. But what? How do you know when you've learned something?
If you can repeat it.
Yeah, so if you can repeat it, yeah.
When my thinking or dealing with a thing changes.
Uh-huh, so you respond to it in a different way? Yeah, very good, yeah.
A bit of pleasure because I understood something.
So a bit of pleasure because you've understood something important for yourself, yeah. So that's often a part of learning that we've forgotten. When you learn something new at your job, most people don't walk around the office. Ooh, I learned to use the new program today. We forget the pleasure in learning. What else? Any other ideas? How do you know when you've learned something?
When she repeats something, she notices that she can do it differently or better.
Uh-huh. So that brings up an idea, yeah?
When I can put together new connections.
Yes. So the two things that were just said of putting together new connections or doing it more than one way in different ways, that really speaks to another level of learning. In fact, if you look at something like the skill acquisition, part of the difference between someone who's a beginner and someone who's an expert is the expert can take things and utilize them in different ways to get the same outcome. Where a beginner only has one way of doing something. And if it doesn't work, they feel stuck. And actually, Feldenkrais said that to really have learned something, you need to know how to do it in at least three different ways. And that gives us a different perspective about learning. Certainly when we want to learn something, we feel better the more ways we know how to do something. But so much of our learning is because we have to do it that we don't want to bother with learning a second or a third way. So again, for a child, learning is paramount. Now, there's another aspect of learning that's not talked about in most contexts. It's very important in this work. And that's learning how to learn. And that's different than learning. So what do you think learning how to learn is?
It's methodology to get to the goal.
Yeah, so it's a methodology to get to the goal. But that implies, well, yes, I agree with you. Yeah, I'll say more later, yeah. Let's hear some more.
To find your personal way to put things together.
Uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh. And that's an important part of learning, yeah.
To become curious like a child.
So we can say one thing for sure, that without curiosity, it's very hard to learn. Except if there's another context, which we don't want to explore, which is the fastest way to learn, actually, which is through pain and fear. When someone learns through pain or fear, they learn really fast. The problem is that kind of learning is compulsive. I can only respond one way when I learn like that. And it usually stays with me and colors the rest of my life. And certainly there's no joy and pleasure in that kind of learning. We can actually say that curiosity is one of the functions of our nervous system. What else do you think learning how to learn is? It's not an easy question, is it?
Find out which sensory system she utilizes for learning.
Okay, so some people learn more auditorily, some more kinesthetically, some more visually. I actually had, I don't know if you're familiar with the work NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming. I was teaching in a training in Ashland, Oregon, and there was an NLP trainer in the group, and she came up to me in the break. She said, "You do everything." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "For the visual people, you have handouts and you write things down. For the auditory, you have a good speaking voice and you tell stories, keep them interested. And," she said, "for the kinesthetic learners, you keep them entertained." And I said, I don't understand that. What does that mean?" And she said, "Kinesthetic learners need to be entertained. And if you don't entertain them, they'll entertain themselves." And I went, "Oh, that's me. I'm the worst student to have in your class. Because if you don't hold my interest, I start fooling around. And I get in trouble." And it really changed my understanding of some of my students. When they start to get restless, bored, I realized I wasn't holding their interest, entertaining them. So there are these different styles of learning. But still, there's something underneath that about learning how to learn that will be true for visual, kinesthetic, or auditory learners. And so everything, yeah? So to be willing to make mistakes and have it be a process of failure as well as success. We could say that that actually is an essential part of everyone's learning. And at some point, we give up the idea of making mistakes. We're not allowed to do it. And so everything that we've been talking about, both in terms of learning or learning how to learn, is accurate. You see, I haven't said to anyone, "No, that's not true." That would be a different kind of learning. That's the kind of learning where I'm the expert and I know what's best. And that has its place. I wouldn't eliminate that as a choice either. And so when I think of learning or learning how to learn, I think, how can we be inclusive in it? So we don't eliminate any of the ideas that you put forth. And that if we're really in the context of learning, when someone says something that we hadn't thought of, we consider it. So when I talk to a group about learning how to learn, every once in a while, someone says something I hadn't considered. It shifts or changes my definition. Now, I'll add one more thing to our definition, which I think may have been said indirectly, I'm not sure, which is the underlying strategies that we all bring to the learning process, but the strategies that we don't know that we have. Which is, it sounds like this. It's usually an internal conversation. And it sounds like, "I'm never going to be able to learn this. I'm going to be the best one here." Maybe it shows up in the where you sit in the room. Maybe you always sit in the back of the room, as far away from the teacher as possible. Or as close as possible. Often we don't know that we do these things. And the most terrifying thing I can do is say, "You stay where you are. I'm going to teach from over here now." And some people here are going, "No!" So we have these underlying strategies. I'm going to be the best one. I'll never understand this. They're doing it better than me. I wish I had practiced more at home before. After I leave, I'm going to practice more. I say I'm going to practice, but then I don't practice. So we laugh because it's familiar to everyone, these internal thoughts. And this colors all of our learning. Oh, I forgot one. I can learn math, but I can't learn languages. So we come up with these ideas of ourself, and they're very connected to our self-image. Now, and here we get to practice something in an unusual way. So I'll be guiding you through movements. And for those of you who are new, so what we're doing today and tomorrow is awareness through movement, which came out of another modality called functional integration. Functional integration is a hands-on technique where the practitioner uses what he or she feels or sees to help someone improve their use of themselves. Awareness through movement does the same thing, but it's generalized to a group. So in the movements that I guide you through, you might notice at times that you're having some of these conversations with yourself. It doesn't mean that we're going to get rid of them in 2 days. In fact, those conversations serve us in some way. They got us to where we are today. And it's likely at the time that we developed them, it was the best we could do with the information that we had. Now, if we tried to interrupt these conversations in the real world, of course, this is still the real world, but I mean the world where outcomes become more important, it's disturbing to listen to them. But here in the movements we do, we can start to listen to ourselves in a different way. Not to change it, but to wonder about it. And if you think of a child's experience, we can pretty much say that they wonder about a lot of things. It's the way they represent their curiosity. Now, I started to talk about how these conversations are a reflection of our self-image. So for a moment, I want to talk about self-image. And those of you who worked with me before know this story. And I still tell it every time I teach to every group anywhere. So I was investigating self-image to make a workshop in it. And I started to think that self-image was a reflection of a fairly simple idea. It was a reflection of how much I like myself or how much I don't like myself. So if I have a good self-image, I like myself. And if I don't have such a good self-image, I don't like myself. And then I started to think that my job is to help people like themselves more. And of course, I do it through teaching the Feldenkrais method. So before I go on with that, is there anyone here who doesn't want to like themselves more? And everybody always laughs. You can ask all kinds of questions, but I've never heard anyone say to this question, no. Who would say no to that? Now again, it sounds nice. It immediately brings up a lot of problems. You know what the problems are? What do you think? If you think about liking yourself more, what do you think of?
Things that you do wrong.
Yeah, things you do wrong. So really what you're saying are things you don't like. That's what we run into. And so when we run into the parts of ourselves we don't like, we have to be very gentle and kind with ourselves. So in the same way that we can't change our learning strategies overnight, we don't just like ourselves all of a sudden. It's as much a part of the process as anything else. And again, in here, we get to do something unusual, which is to practice it. But if you think about it, how do you practice liking yourself more? I'm telling myself to, I like myself more, yeah?
She accepts what she sees.
Yeah, sure. So accepting what you see is a big part of it, if you can accept it. Not so easy. We can keep telling myself, I am really good, I am really good, I am really good. And we believe it while we say it, And then in the next moment, it falls apart. It's not enough. And here we get to practice it in a very different way. And it's the kind of back door to our self-image, which is through movement and moving in a way that we like the way it feels. So that we practice that. And that will, I'll remind you of that. Because we forget. Why? Because we get focused on an outcome. And we get focused on an outcome, we forget about ourselves. We forget to be kind. We forget that it's okay to make mistakes. We forget to listen to ourselves. So that's wonder. We can talk about wonder as a quality that youth has. And we can also talk about listening to ourselves. So if an adult comes to see me privately, and I say, look, this is painless. It shouldn't hurt. So you tell me if it's uncomfortable. They say, yeah, yeah. And then I'm working with them. And I see their face. They're making a face. And I say, is that uncomfortable? No, no, it's fine. No, really, is it uncomfortable? A little bit. We don't say anything. But if I work with a three-year-old child and I do something they don't like, they push me away forcefully. They won't tolerate it. Their sense of themselves is regulated by their state of comfort and liking the way something feels. So that's what we want to see if we can explore more of. Now, let's talk about one last thing, which is the quality of how we do these lessons. So I've already suggested one, that you move in a way that you like the way it feels. Another is that you stay within your range of comfort. So if something becomes uncomfortable, you can do one of two or three things. Make the movement smaller. Do it slower. And if it's still uncomfortable, call me over. And I'll see if I can adapt it for you. Sometimes people fall asleep in these lessons. It's some of the best sleep you'll ever get. But if you wake up and you don't know where we are, don't be embarrassed. Okay? It's really fine. I'll be asking you questions throughout. Unless I ask, they're rhetorical. Some of the questions you may have answers to. Some maybe you don't. So I don't know is one of the right answers. And you'll see if the answers develop as we go on. And before we start, is there anyone in here who has any kind of pain or difficulty I should know about? Yeah?
Her shoulder is restricted in movement.
Okay. Is it comfortable to lie on that shoulder?
She needs enough support underneath her head to reduce the pressure.
Okay, okay. Anyone else?
The neck.
Neck, okay. Usually if I wait long enough, everyone says something. Okay, so maybe if you have something personal, you can tell me in the break or something. Now, I just realized I've been talking for a long time, and I don't want to take a break, but maybe if you need to use the bathroom, I'll give you a couple of minutes.